Let me introduce meaning the problem. The Rasa'il Ikhwan al-Safa, well-known encyclopedia in 4 volumes, and then Risala al-Jami'a in another 2 volumes. So Ikhwan al-Safa, translated as the brethren of purity or brother of sincerity or whatever you might call it, is a pseudonym assumed by the authors of a famous encyclopedia of the philosophical and religious sciences, who describe themselves as a group of truth seekers, members of a religio-political movement. They deliberately conceal their identity so that their epistles entitled Rasa'il Ikhwan al-Safa wa Khullan al-Wafa would gain wider circulation and would appeal to broad a cross-section of Arabic-speaking, not only Muslim, but also non-Muslim, meaning members of this Arabic-speaking society. Over the centuries, because it was anonymous, the authorship has been widely debated and ascribed to various groups, such as the Mu'tazila, the Sufis, and to certain individuals, like Imam Jafar al-Sadiq, who died in 148, middle of the 2nd century, and the great astronomer and mathematician Al-Majriti, who died towards the end of the 4th century. Then, at this stage, let me introduce the assertion of Abu Hayyan al-Tawhidi, who was a giant figure. He died in 414. That the Rasa'il were composed by a group of learned men in Basra with unorthodox, so I leave it, I think the morning was expressed orthodox and unorthodox belief, during the middle of the 4th century was widely accepted. However, Ibn al-Qifti, who is coming 2 centuries later on, the famous biographer of physicians and philosopher, he expressed his skepticism of Tawhidi's attribution to Basran scholars by acknowledging the prevalence of a belief that the Rasa'il were composed by Alid Imam. About the modern Western scholarship, I have unpublished almost over 200 pages monograph, and I think the starting point, I have started it about 1810, because the one of the largest epistle, it is a fable or a fictitious story, and is entitled The Case of the Animals versus Man, meaning the animals complain of the atrocities of human being destroying the environment and a number of other things, and they appeal to the just king of the jinn. Okay, I won't go into details about the jinn. Of course, it's some species also mentioned in the Quran, and it's very interesting thing. So I have sketched details over the 200 years of Western scholarship. I won't go into details. But then let me mention my mentor in Cairo, Hussein Al-Hamdani. His article entitled Rasa'il Ikhwan al-Safa in the Literature of the Ismaili Tayyibi Dawa, published in 1932, it's a watershed. For the first time, he pointed out that there are very close similarities between the Ismaili ideology and this Rasa'il Ikhwan al-Safa, and he said that the Ismaili sources attribute that this was written or compiled by the Imam, who was at that time in Satr, or might Ismailis don't use, or one can call it Ghaiba, by Imam Ahmad. He was the grandson of Muhammad bin Ismail. So you could see, meaning around the beginning of the 3rd or middle of the 3rd century. Unfortunately, that the article published by Stern, and I will restrict myself only to Stern and Madlung, in 1946, Stern again resurrected the Tawhidi's theory and totally rejected Hamdani's article, and then said that, well, these Ismailis are fantasizing, so to say, that their imam might have composed it. And then in the 60s, unfortunately, Madlung followed in the footsteps of Stern and elaborated his studies about the origins of Ismailis and also the authorship of the Rasa'il. And here, let me add it, that in that way, according to the Abu Hayyan's theory and both the Stern and Madlung, they think that it was compiled around the middle of the 4th century, which I consider is quite late, and they attribute that they were compiled by the Karamita, which again I don't agree, and there are major differences between the Ismailis and the Karamita. So without going into details, my colleague Abbas Hamdani in 76 published an article. Before that, he more or less reconstructed the whole Abu Hayyan's theory, which I will come little later. And then in 76, he published another article that during the time of the Imam al-Mu'izz, or the Caliph, the Mu'izz, there was a writer, Ismaili author, Ja'far bin Mansur al-Yaman, and his testimony could not be just neglected. He was the son of the first emissary and who established the Ismaili base in Yemen. So he was more or less his father was commissioned by the, to put it simply right now, without confusing you, father or the predecessor of the Mahdi, who so to say, made himself a zuhur in the North Africa. So this testimony could not be just, I think, overlooked. Then what, so to say, prompted me that in 90s, two articles written by Michael Brett, who is teaching here at SOAS, I think he's a leading historian, and these two articles, I will quote it, meaning he more or less totally, I would say, devastating, the demolition of Stern and Madlung's theory. So another question is, why did I select Stern and Madlung? Is it obvious? But then, again, I think, let me now quote the briefly quotations from Michael Brett. In the first article, he says, the current version of Ismaili origins was established in the 1950s and early 60s by Stern and Madlung, who at the same time took the evolution of Fatimid doctrine down to the threshold of its perfection from the mid-10th century onwards. Then another German scholar, there in Cosmologie und Heilslehre der frühen Ismailia, meaning the doctrine and the early doctrine of the Ismailis by Heinz Hulb, he built upon the premise or theory of Stern and Madlung, and his conclusion produced the principal account of this evolution of what Michael Brett calls it Kabbalistic messianism surrounding the expectation of the Mahdi around 900. Then I think the second article is much more elaborate, and let me just read one or two sentences. So in the perspective of Stern and Madlung and its belief in the imamate of Muhammad bin Ismail, the account of Fatimid origin established by the work of Stern and especially that of Madlung turns much more specifically upon the identity of the Fatimid Mahdi in the mind of the faithful, and it posits an extensive conspiracy theory developing from 850 onwards, and I won't go into, and then with mixing up with the Ibn al-Qadda and number other things. So here the question I think Michael Brett has raised, and that is, I think, number of scholars pointed out this morning too, the sources. And the sources, I think it is the Islamic historiography. You cannot really rely. It is what I would say, in the words of the Jones Wansborough, he says that the Islamic historiography or Islamic history is neither neutral nor profane in its approach to the affairs of the Muslim community, either in the present or in the past. Therefore, reconstruction of political history from such material is anachronistic. So this is the, I think, main thing. And the reason I selected Stern and Madlung, because these are the still considered leading scholars of Ismailism. And so not only the Ismaili scholars, but non-Ismaili scholars, more or less blindly, well, meaning one can excuse, they don't have time to investigate, so they blindly follow it. And so this, it's, so to say, churning out the same material. So what is the state of the art right now? I think the generally among the Ismaili scholars of Ismaili studies, there is a more or less a consensus about the authorship that definitely it has to do with the Ismailis, no doubt. So the Ismaili character of the Rasaili is no longer in dispute. What is yet to be determined is the precise identity of their authors within the Ismaili movement, because it was more or less, I think, what I would say, collection of various factions in order to bring down, so to say, the Abbasid dynasty. And in that way, I think both the Stern and Marlung were mainly influenced by Abu Hayyan al-Tawhidi. So what is the theory? Let me inject here Abu Hayyan's story. He narrates this story in his Kitabul Imta wal Mu'anasa. It's also a fictional literary story, meaning seances or night stories. And it was compiled in between 373 or 375. And he mentions that there was a learned group, the Basran scholars, who, so to say, put up, and he accuses them that they were unorthodox, or they were more or less malahida, meaning the heretics. And he names, I think, about five individuals, the Zaid bin Rifa'a, who held a high position, I think, among the, what I would say, the Twelver, who had adopted Twelver Shi'is, the Buyids, at that time in Basra and like that. So he was accusing the Abu Zaid in a different way. And I think Abbas Hamdani has really demolished this whole theory. But let me add in my way, I myself also skepticism concerning the Tawhidi's story. And I would caution the reader that his report should be taken with a grain of salt. In his Humanism and Renaissance of Islam, Joel Kramer also depicted a colorful picture of life of the potentates, literatures, government secretaries, scholars, patrons, as well as the different literary circle and societies under the Buyids. He states that the atmosphere of conspiracy and intrigue prevailed at the court of Ibn Sa'dan, where I think the Abu Hayyan al-Tawhidi composed this his work. And Abu Hayyan was also known at that time, I think, for fabrication, because he also fabricated an Ibn al-Hadid, the famous commentator of Nahjul Balagha, also accused him of fabricating or manufacturing a whole epistle in the name of Abu Bakr and Umar concerning the right of Ali, ascribing it to the authorship of Abu Ubaidah, the trio Abu Bakr, Umar and Abu Ubaidah. And Kramer also observes that Abu Hayyan had deserved reputation of being a liar, fabricator of traditions, and was noted for his opposition to Shiism. So this is what it is, unfortunately, these two scholars. There is not much time, so I have quoted the two articles by Stern, in which he wholeheartedly accepts the Abu Hayyan the theory. And what I would say, he concludes that in a word, their information, meaning of why Abu Hayyan Tawhidi, is absolutely reliable, and we can rest assured that they do give us the actual names of the sincere brethren, the authors of the Rasail Ikhwan al-Safa. But again, as I said, Abu Hayyan's, the testimony and the narration is really not that reliable. But look, the Stern here speaks more of a positive belief that we can absolutely rely. History is not that simple. And again, those who are familiar with the philosophy of history, just to give one example of the Edward Carr's work, What is History? Well, so I would just quote one sentence, that the facts of history are not that simple. Let me cite one quote, the history we read, though based on facts, is strictly speaking not factual at all, but a series of accepted judgments. End of the quote. So this is it. Then in 64, he, in the second article, he resurrected again the Abdul Jabbar's, the analyzed the Qadi Abdul Jabbar, and he was also a very anti-Shia. So, and again, he does not mention the Ikhwan al-Safa, but because of the Abu Hayyan Tawhid, he connects the dots, well, without any evidence. So I won't go into it, but then another issue, I think Stern raised it, he cannot differentiate. The Ismailis were composed of various heterogeneous groups. So he confuses and says that Ismailis or the Fatimids is the same as the Karameta. I think it's totally, I would use the word nonsense to compare them. And so I think this is the main thing. And then, unfortunately, Madlung went a little bit further, and he also elaborated this theory. And Madlung, I would say, unfortunately, is an excellent scholar, no doubt about it. But again, we have our shortcomings. And he misinterprets, I think, quotes from the Rasail Ikhwan al-Safa, where the Rasail speaks about the fetus in the womb of the mother, that they are influenced by the stars or by the zodiac signs, and there is no mention totally, absolutely, Muhammad bin Ismail or his zuhur in the Rasail Ikhwan al-Safa, but probably it is his, looks like misinterpretation, and he thinks that Rasail mentions that the descendants of Muhammad bin Ismail had fallen out of, so to say, their status or position. I think it is totally not true, unfortunately, meaning I have a lot of respect my Madlung, but some of the things, meaning his claims, are totally ambiguous claims without any evidence and clarification. So let me in that way conclude, and without going into much details, that Abbas Hamdani, he puts the, again, let me be clear, the Jafar bin Mansur al-Yaman, he does not claim. He said that Imam Ahmad, during the period of the Sat, Ansha'a al-Rasail. Now, Ansha'a, I don't translate, is that he is the author. Probably he circulated. So might be there was a group involved with it and like that. And then there are two theories. Yves Marquette, he has spent his lifetime, at least three books and more than 40 or 50 articles on Rasail Ikhwan al-Safa. He thinks that probably this work might have started during the time of Jafar al-Sadiq and completed just before the appearance, or might be even continued after the appearance of the Fatimids. So the time period he gives, it's more than 100 years, and it's a problematic thing. Abbas Hamdani thinks that probably it was issued just before the emergence of the Fatimids in North Africa, and I agree with that, but with certain, I think, my own, I would say, reservations. And in that way, what I would say that the another thing is, I'm involved with the Institute of Ismaili Studies, the critical edition and English translation with annotation of the Rasail Ikhwan al-Safa. And there, let me mention another problems we are facing, all the Muslim sources, that the oldest extant complete copy of the manuscript is, according to me or most of the scholars, written, or this is about 250 or 300 years after the compilation or circulation of the Rasail. So a lot of mischief must have happened in the 200 years. It cannot be relied. And in my introduction to two epistles I have translated and edited, I have pointed out the question of interpolation, the same thing you raised it about the Quran and Riwayat, Ikhtilaf Riwayat, another thing. It's a serious problem, okay, not to be totally ignored. So there is no reliable evidence of, so to say, how the text of the Rasali Khwana Safa passed. So I have put forward another theory. It's the best, I think, evidence for us to examine the is the time layer, the time period. We can examine, because Ikhwan al-Safa used all the Greek sources translated under the Kindi and his school. And I have written in my another publication 2 years ago about Sijistani's Kitab al-Maqalid, that definitely it was prior to Sijistani, and I think that it was a pre-Kindi and post-Farabi composition. So at least I think this is it, and without going into other arguments, I think I would just stop here, that time layer also could really help in determining the exact date. Thank you very much.